All right.
Zhuangzi said he had a story he told, Aurora, about an old man who sat under a knotted pine tree. And everybody was always coming and saying, you should get rid of that knotted pine tree. It's not good for this. It's not good for that. It's not good for this other. And then finally he's like, but it's, you know, it's good for itself. And, you know, once in a while I'll be a bad guy and I'll steal it for shade. You know, I'll give it a purpose. But on the whole, everybody was wanting him to. So this is another thing that comes out of this. If you can't make something, if you can't name something and make it usable, people will tend to want to destroy it. Right? They'll be like, I can plant a usable tree there that we can make pencils and desktops and paddles out of. Right? That's a very important point.
And does that go along with, like, it's easier to destroy something and don't have a name on it?
Yeah, because it's thoughtless. Right? It's thoughtless. Or there's some names that are so... There are some names that are so out of the structure, right? Like wild. The wild. So it's just got this one name, and it's kind of like outside, right? It's like the wild. It's out there. And what do we do with the wild?
Shelter ourselves from it.
Tame, and then we try to tame it, right? So every year, a few more acres of the community taps into the primeval forest until finally all there's left is this big tree that doesn't seem to serve any purpose, and we tear it down and plant something we want to plant. Right? But this is the issue here, too. He's kind of given a hint that he's saying, I'm giving you some real heavy-ass wisdom here. That everything comes from the Tao, comes from the free-flowing Tao. All is Tao. All returns to Tao. But even that name is dangerous. Because you're going to start looking for something. But he's also saying here, in this heavy stuff that he's putting down here, he's saying, always be without desire to observe this mystery. Because once you get the desire for it, now you've turned Tao into Tao. And you're going to start looking for that to control it. You want to get it. And because he says that being with desire always observes the boundary. So once you have the desire for the mystery, that gives you all this other desire, and all that other desire means that you just start going after all of the boundary things, right? So this is very important to think in terms of a consumer-driven society like ours. How many people in here today have more than two things? I'm with you at this very moment. How many people, this is a better question. How many people who are in this room right now have two or less things? You have it with you right now. Two things or less. Excuse me. I'm losing my language. How many people in this room have two things or less with you at this very moment? How many people in this room have five things or less with you at this moment? How many people in this room have 10 things with you or less? You think so?
Well, I'm just thinking, couldn't it be possible that, like, say I didn't know the names of these things, to me they're nameless? Like, could that mean that they're not things?
Well, maybe.
Can you group your things together?
You could all say, I only have me and my stuff, so I have two or less things. You could do that. Yeah, sure. There's tricks. But that in itself is kind of funny because human beings are so good at coming up with tricks. And this is so, you know, we're kind of dealing, this in one sense, this is showing us the confluence of a number of philosophical notions like metaphysics, which we'll start studying a little bit more next week with Jaspers, right? What's beyond the physical realm? That's Tao, if there's anything that you'd want to, right? But also ethics. In Robert's example of just grouping everything down to just me and my stuff, so I have two or less things, see, this shows us a kind of ethical issue, is that we're slippery thinkers. Robert especially is a slippery thinker. Slippery thinkers, meaning one of the reasons that we have a lot of ethical issues is that we slip ourselves into places where it looks like we're not being poorly ethical, right? Because in reality, including me, I would imagine everybody in this room has probably got at least 30 or 40 things with you right now, things that you don't need. And sometimes it's just memory, right? You know, beautiful memories or beautiful stuff. I can't look in the mirror all the time. I need something pretty to look at, right? My husband gave me this on our 4th anniversary, so it carries our marriage in it, I guess, whatever. But I don't really need it for that, but, right? I got my Birkenstocks on my feet, and I got my iPhone 6 that's fixing to be an iPhone 7 in a month. What? Keith, you're talking about not being... I didn't say it wasn't materialistic. I was just pointing out what we're doing, because I'm a slippery ethicist. But, you know, the main thing here is that, you know, we could look in this room. We could be here literally longer than it would take to go through the day, just pinpointing all the things that are here. But why then... The nameless and the nameable come from the same, but with different names. So even to talk about the nameless is to name it. And this is going to be important because whenever we start looking at the pre-Socratic philosophers a little farther, there's one pre-Socratic philosopher who's going to come along, and he's going to kind of put forward something very similar to this. And he actually would have been... He probably would have lived within about 100 years of Lao Tzu. Okay, he's going to put forward something very similar about this, and there's going to be a technical name that we're going to learn to go alongside of, you know, our Greek. We have our Chinese Tao, and we're going to have a Greek word that we're going to use to think with too. But I'm going to leave that aside for right now because I want us to. Anam, did you have a poem that stood out to you at all? It's actually, you can't remember if it's 39 or 38?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Well, there's good ones in 38 and 39. There's both two things, but let's look at 39, actually, before we look at 38. Because this is really good because it gets to a couple of other really important issues in Taoism. Nam, you want to read the first few lines there?
In the ancient days, grasping one, heaven grasping one, clear and bright, earth grasping one, tranquility, spirit grasping one, effective, river valley grasping one, fullness, 10,000 things grasping one, growth, kings grasping one, leading under heaven, draw this, grasp one, heaven without clarity and brightness, splitting open, earth without tranquility, shaking apart, spirit without effect, stopping. River valley without fullness, drying up. 10,000 things without growth, going extinct. Kings without nobility and dignity, falling.
Okay. Hence, the noble is the root of the simple. The highest must be the root of the lowest. So here we get into the paradoxical language that he utilizes in order to try to get us, you know, like when Jesus says the first will be last and the last will be first. And he says, in one sense, the noble or the complicated, or the noble is the root of the simple, the highest must be the root of the lowest. In the ancient world, and in some kinds of theories that are still extant, but not quite as much since the beginning of the scientific age, in the ancient world, there was a way to kind of summarize the harmony of the cosmos. Okay? And if you remember your Hesiod, you remember how everything in ancient Greek, that ancient Greek poem, everything was kind of chaotic. So we were looking actually for something to happen that would put everything in a kind of just order, right? And so there's, in the ancient world, the idea of seeking after the harmony of the cosmos could be summed up in one little motto: as above, so below, as without, so within. Okay? As above, so below, as without, so within. That is that everything is in a mirroring structure, right? And so the structure that you, and in kind of like with our vast scientific knowledge, that whatever you see out to the utmost edges of a 21 billion light year wide universe, so you also see down at the level of the inside of an atom.
So is it kind of like saying one loses its meaning without the other?
One loses its meaning without the other, but also that there's just this sort of mirroring thing going on the entire time, similitude. So and one interesting issue here, if we look at this idea of the one, right, it's like everything, the universe, everything is in an atom. Right. The whole structure is there. The world in a flower. Right. That if you can contemplate one thing, it gives you the entirety of the universe. So that's what we're talking about here. Heaven grasping one. So when heaven grasps oneness, it's clear and bright. And when earth grasps oneness, it's tranquil. And when the spirit grasps oneness, it's effective. Right? It means it's not frustrated. And when the river valley grasps one, it's full. The idea here is that every part grasping that it's interconnected to everything else, it's not upset. It's not out of harmony. And this Greek word harmony, harmonia, is a very interesting word because I could show you the word in a couple of ways, but this is a harmony, a hinge. We already saw the hinge there, right? This is a harmonia. This is a harmony, a hinge. Things working together, right? And even more importantly, when things work together, recognizing how they all fit together, right? There's no notion that there's more than one thing. Right? When something works, you don't think twice about the function of the door. Right? You stop. And you start thinking about the door, it becomes different. But generally, you just open the door and you walk in. And so long as the door isn't locked, the hinge isn't creaky, there's not something wonky about it, You know, there's not something blocking the threshold. You trip over it. You don't think about it. Because it's just, it's actually just a part of the room. And the room is just a part of the building. And the building is just a part of the block. And the block is a part of the city. And the city is a part of the countryside. And the countryside is a part of the continent. And the continent is a part of the hemisphere. And the hemisphere is a part of the planet. And the planet is a part of the solar system. The solar system is a part of the galaxy. That freaking door gets you out to the Big Bang and back. I don't mean TV show. Right? It gets you, it's the whole, it's like you can't, there's nothing, there is, so long as things are working, you never question how they interconnect. But it's a part of a, it's part of a one flow, right? And it's not until things don't work that you then begin to kind of question what's the matter. And then we go back. Draw this inference. Grasp one. Now you got to kind of see how Taoism becomes the touchstone entryway, if I may, the door for Buddhism when it comes to India. I said when it comes to China from India. A lot of the words, the Buddhist terms from India, because it's originally an Indian philosophy, when the Buddhists go across the Himalayas into China, the first thing they encounter that gives them the words to translate the Buddhist ideas is Taoism. Okay? So like today, one form of Buddhism that everyone's pretty familiar with, or that they've learned the concepts, Zen Buddhism, Japanese Zen Buddhism, comes from China, Chan Buddhism, and it traces its roots back to both Buddhism in India and Taoism in China. Okay? And I say this because of this idea. Draw this inference. Grasp one. There is no distinction. Grasp one. Oh, I don't grasp one. I grasp two. Well, you grasp two. You've already grasped four. You've already grasped 16. And so on, and so on, and so on. Right? Heaven without clarity and brightness splitting open. So here it is. Heaven doesn't grasp one. It's suddenly without clarity and brightness. Now it splits open. Earth doesn't grasp one. It's without tranquility. It shakes apart. Spirit doesn't grasp one. It's without effect. It stops. This is death. River valley without fullness dries up. 10,000 things without growth go extinct. Kings, rulers, governments without nobility and dignity fall. That should give us all pause, considering the time of year or the time of the season. Hence, the noble is the root of the simple, the highest must be the root of the lowest. For this, and here they see something. He says, look around at our culture. And one of the things that kings often do, popes do this. Right? Popes do this. For this, the kings call themselves the orphaned, the needy, and the ill-provided, to keep themselves humble. Right? Popes usually call themselves the servants of the servants of God. Right? For this, the kings call themselves the orphan, the needy, and the ill-provided. Is this not the root of humility? Is it not? And then he says, that thus, reaching for all, what's the word? Thus, reaching for all the Cadillacs is not having a Cadillac. Right? Thus reaching for all the IMAX is not having an IMAX. Thus reaching for all the diamonds is not having a diamond. These people with this humility who are to be examples of how to live in the world, They do not need to be carved jade, yet still are hard as stone. Now, what the hell does that mean? Well, we got footnotes. The gilding of the exterior is not what makes jade valuable. So here's the basic issue. It's nobility and dignity that makes a king or a leader a great person. Okay? It's grasping one that makes every human being a beautiful human being. And it doesn't matter whether you wear gold or jade or diamonds or the best clothes or any of the rest of that stuff. It's that you grasp one. As within, so without. Because it goes both ways. As below, so above. The gilding of the exterior is not what makes jade valuable, lasting, or even beautiful. Rather, jade's lasting power, hardness, and sustainability is in its being a rock. What is the interior or foundational excellence that shines through? This is what will obtain in the object as well as in the person. Right? So yes, jade is very beautiful, but you take it and you shine it up and you carve it and you make it prettier. Right? And it lasts 2,500 years and ends up in a museum. But what makes it last and end up in a museum is not the fact that somebody grabbed it 2,500 years ago and made it look like a little dragon. It's that it's a rock.